Hello and welcome to the In the Pen podcast, a podcast about relievers, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Jake Crumpler, and as always, I'm joined by Pitcherless bullpen expert Rick Graham. Rick, the trade deadline just passed, and it was pretty hectic. How did it live up to your expectations?
Yeah, I think it was, well, overall, I think it was busier than I had imagined. I guess like all the names that we've been hearing about for the most part did get moved. You know, and there wasn't not too many shocking moves. I think the catchers, Hicks and Rutschman, was kind of a bit surprising, maybe those right. guys getting moved, and some of the relievers too. But we had mentioned, you know, there's always like a couple, you know, guys with term who get moved mm-hmm. That you don't expect. So, but overall, I think it was a pretty crazy and very, I mean, for us, I know we're big into the roster moves and transactions, and like there wasn't an hour stretch the past 24 hours, you know, Monday that was, we didn't have a deal. It seemed mm-hmm. like, so it was a entertaining trade deadline for sure. I think, you know, the one thing with relievers, I felt there would have been more of those like depth relievers getting moved. I feel like there were a couple impact guys. The depth guy, like Brent Suter was moved and Kirby Yates. But like, other than that, there was a lot of guys, like the Reds didn't move any of their 1 year, right. you know, guy. There's some guys who I felt mm-hmm. like the Royals too, like Schreiber. I know they just DFA'd Strom, but like, you know, I thought Schreiber would have some sort of market. So yeah. And interesting that those depth guys didn't get moved, and it was more, you know, teams looking for actual impacts, which I guess makes sense, you know. But yeah, it's still a very interesting deadline. We'll break it down from there's one team that I don't understand why they didn't make any moves for relievers, especially. But yeah, we'll get into all that.
Yeah, I think what I like the most about the deadline is that teams that in the past have not partaken in the deadline have just sort of held pat and let things figure themselves out. We're actually active here. Like the Angels were super active. The Rockies yeah. were super active. These were teams that in the past would have just held on to players and then watched them walk in free agency. And then everybody would call right. them just stupid franchises. And I'm glad that we have teams finally figuring things out. I'm glad the Giants were able to capitalize on some guys. We'll definitely talk about an interesting one between both of our teams, but I thought yeah. it was a pretty fun deadline. If anybody's interested in hearing my thoughts on every single trade from deadline day, go listen to the First Pitch podcast. Yeah. It's an hour-long First Pitch podcast, probably a world record there, but we broke down every single trade there. That was really exciting. I also love Trade Deadline Day. I think the funniest thing from Trade Deadline Day is after the deadline, my mom texted me and my brother and said, "What do you guys think of the buzzer beater deal that sent Casey Mize to the Padres?" And I was like, what are you talking about? Why are you asking us this? Like, it was such like an AI question. I have no clue. My sister was like, "Who put you up to this?" But I sent her my podcast. So I was like, whoever's asking you for these questions, they can watch this and they can get my thoughts on every single trade. But yeah, I love the trade deadline. It was a lot of fun. I was just like analyzing trades for 24 hours straight because we had some exciting ones over the weekend as well. But here on the In the Pen podcast, we talk about relievers pretty much only. So we're going to focus on all of the trades from the past week that involved relievers. There were a couple of injuries and minor transactions that we'll toss in there as well. But we'll go pretty much team by team across the entire league and talk about the moves that every team made. And let's jump right into it because there's a lot of them. It's going to take us a while because we usually sort of expound a little bit. So let's start with the A's as we go alphabetically. They were pretty quiet at the trade deadline, surprisingly. Maybe they didn't really have a lot of pieces that they could trade, but I would expect them to do something more. Maybe they're one of those teams that see the impending lockout as a reason to not try to capitalize on guys with control. But regardless, they traded outfielder Colby Thomas to the Phillies in exchange for Seth Johnson, who is sort of like a swingman at this point. He was a failed starter. He's transitioned to the bullpen. He's not done much in the majors, but in the minors, he was pretty exciting this year. I think one of his best minor league seasons, 2.17 ERA. He's got a 33% strikeout rate, sub 10% walk rate. So definitely some potential in the 27-year-old Seth Johnson, who has, I think, like 6 years of control as well.
Yeah. There's been spurts. Yeah. He's, I think, been up twice with the Phillies this year. And yeah, there's times where his stuff looks really good. Then you can see some sort of, you know, high leverage reliever in the making. You know, the A's, I mean, they had a good amount of, you know, right-handed hitting outfielders. So this was kind of a, you know, we have a surplus of that. We need some bullpen help down the road. So, yeah, I mean, take a chance on a guy like Seth Johnson who has really good stuff. Not sure what that bullpen right now is still kind of, you know, it's like Hogan Harris and Elvis Alvarado and no one else. I think Johnson has a chance to, you know, climb the ladder there pretty quickly if everything works out. But going to Sacramento, tough. That's not the best. It's not ideal exactly.
No. Yeah. The fastball is pretty dope for him. 98 miles per hour, 17 inches of IVB, 1.5 HABA. So definitely some potential there if he can work on improving his slider. Probably just his ability to throw strikes will be a big factor as well. But definitely one of the more minor moves here. Next, we'll go to the Braves, who are also pretty quiet. Did you see that clip of Alex Anthopoulos sort of being a jerk to somebody asking him why they didn't do much at the deadline?
I don't think I've seen it, but I think I saw a reference today on like Twitter scrolling through. Yeah.
And he like took offense to it, and he was basically like, I don't understand your question.
It is kind of a weird. I mean, they usually are more active. They usually are adding I think the last couple of years they've added relievers when, you know, it seemed like their bullpen was all set. But they still, you know, it's still, you know, adding depth at that in the bullpen always helps. And yeah, I'm surprised I guess Brent Suter, but like that's, you know.
But they got Tyler Molly over the weekend as well.
Yeah.
But they traded away Eli White. There was it wasn't really a spectacular trade deadline for the Braves. Yeah. And they definitely needed help in the rotation. I feel like they have arms, but behind Chris Sale, like you don't really trust anybody in the postseason. No. You're not going to turn to like Grant Holmes in game two of the NLCS or whatever. Like Bryce Elder, Martin Perez, Tyler Molly, like those aren't playoff guys, and neither are the youngsters like Owen Murphy, Smith Shaver, J.R. Ritchie, Hurston Waldrop. I don't think any of those guys are going to be the difference makers.
They had the deal for DeGrom, unfortunately.
Oh, I didn't even see that.
Yeah, the DeGrom turned down the he uses no trade clause to turn down a deal. So they had a deal lined up for DeGrom, but yeah, you got to pivot when that doesn't happen, and it didn't really seem to. So
right,
Yeah, just adding Brent Suter from a bullpen standpoint. Mm-hmm. Again, you have Lee, you have Dylan Dodd. It's not like it was the other lefty there I'm blanking on right now.
Danny Young,
which I guess Suter's been a little bit more consistent, but I don't know. It's interesting that that's the only move that they made. Would have thought they would have tried to get a righty in there.
Right. So they got Suter from the Angels in exchange for Nacho Alvarez Jr., not the biggest prospect to give up. He's really struggled in the minors this year. Seems like a utility guy.
He was a prospect at one point. Yeah.
He was. Yeah. It feels like his prospect star has fallen. But yeah, Suter's not the impact bullpen arm that I don't think they needed one, but he doesn't really change a lot. He's one of those workhorse types where he throws really hard. He can pitch every day, he can pitch multiple innings and he can pitch in different situations. And I think that helps a club stay healthy, stay full strength heading into the playoffs. But
he's their new Jesse Chavez.
Yeah.
This, you know, veteran who can give you whatever you need, you know, innings wise or, you know, but yeah, not something to get too excited about. And like Robert Suarez, there hasn't been very much positive news as far as Robert Suarez goes. Obviously, Joe Jimenez hasn't had any positive news. So trying to find, like, you know, you have Fuentes behind Iglesias right now, but then, you know, Tyler Kinley has not been very good. There's no other righty. I mean, Victor Medeiros is the other righty in the bullpen right now. So, yeah, I'm surprised they didn't go out. Even, like, bring back Pierce Johnson. Was that, like, I mean, it's not, it's not a sexy move, but, like, it's
sure. –
It's a guy that's, you know, gives you some depth in your bullpen. So I don't know. Interesting to see how this all shapes out for Atlanta.
Yeah, I think those young starters, I think those guys will be better if they are used in the bullpen in the playoffs, or that at least they'll be more effective. So
yeah,
we'll see how that works out.
Yeah.
Let's go to the Orioles, who were sellers at the deadline, but did not trade away as many guys from their bullpen as I expected. They had a lot of guys that I think were primed to be dealt to teams looking for bullpen reinforcements. They actually extended one of their relievers instead of trading them. Yennier Cano signed a 2-year, $7.5 million contract extension with a $10 million club option for 2029. Cano was ARB eligible through 2028, so they'll get one more year of club control with that option. But they traded away Tyler Wells to the Rays. They also acquired Alex Hoppe from the Mariners with starting pitcher Harrison Kreeling and reliever Brock Moore in exchange for Taylor Ward. Hoppe is a little bit exciting. He's got some potential, yeah. Definitely doesn't throw enough strikes. They also got Moore, who's a 26-year-old righty with a 42% strikeout rate at high A and double A, but he's also walked 13% of the batters he faced. And then sort of an offshoot of that Guardians Brewers trade, they acquired Cody Hoyer from the Brewers in exchange for cash considerations.
Yeah, the Brewers had a weird deadline for sure. But I guess, yeah, that's an interesting one that they just gave up on the guy that they traded Craig Yoho for. Alex Hoppe is he's very interesting. He's been throwing he was throwing, you know, 99 plus the last couple outings with Seattle, started to pique my interest. Not a ton of, you know, it's this is still kind of a tough bullpen to break through in, even after they moved Tyler Wells, but you know, that there's still more opportunity there than probably in Seattle. Yeah, Wells is, I kind of figured that one of those guys was going to go between Wells, Kittredge, and I guess Cano, but they right. kept him. Maybe Garcia would be on the block, but yeah, Wells makes sense. He's having, you know, probably his best year as a reliever. Mm-hmm. So you're selling high there. And I think now who is the, you know, interim closer until it sounds like Ryan Helsley's starting to throw again. Batista's okay. starting to throw again. You know, between Garcia, Cano, and Kittredge, it's not exactly exciting, but I do think Garcia has been giving up a ton of home runs lately, but his stuff's been better. He looks more like his April self. It's just, he was super lucky in April and he's very unlucky right now. So, you know, just water seeking level, whatever that phrase is.
No, you got it.
Seeking this level. So I think Garcia is probably would be the guy I would think gets the save chances there, because Kittredge just hasn't been good and hasn't been consistent. Mm-hmm. And Cano, they've never really had an interest in Cano being the ninth inning. Maybe that contract helps them, you know, lets them give Cano some save chances, but he's more of a
right to not specialist. bump up that ARB price.
Yeah, but okay. They really have been trying to protect him against just facing righties, you know. So
I mean, he's not like he's not your traditional closer either, because he's like
he's not a contact
type of guy,
right? He's great to get you a double play if you need one. Mm-hmm. Maybe a strikeout again against the righty, but yeah, I feel like Garcia makes the most sense. But again, it might only be 3 weeks. I don't know. There's no real timetable on Helsley yet, so
yeah,
or Batista. Even if Batista comes back, it's probably late September. So.
Right. I think that doesn't even seem worth it for the Orioles to bring either of those guys back.
Right. Yeah. Like, it could be like one little setback and those guys aren't going to be available this year. So I think Garcia would be a guy I would have some interest in right now. You're not dropping a top 20 reliever for him, but you know, if you have a extra bullpen spot available, take a flyer on Rico Garcia. He's throwing harder again, at least that gives me hope.
Yeah, definitely not a bullpen that needs to be targeted, but there are a few bullpens where there is, like, there are players that you can be actionable with at this point in fantasy. So the Orioles bullpen is one of those. I think I agree, Garcia better than Kittredge and Cano, but maybe if they're taking opportunities away from each other, it's going to be pretty difficult to find value in that Orioles bullpen. Let's go to the Red Sox, and this is that interesting trade that I hinted at earlier. I find it very exciting, I think, for both sides, maybe less so for the Red Sox than the Giants. But the Giants traded left-handed reliever Eric Miller to the Red Sox in exchange for Marcelo Meyer, the former fourth overall pick. Pretty crazy that they have given up on him already, but I guess they just don't see it working out there. I'm really excited for that return for the Giants. They need somebody to get excited about. They need somebody to give us hope for the future, and Meyer is somebody that I've always been pretty high on, and maybe that was part of like the prospect hype machine prior to his being drafted. That was like, he could be the number one overall pick, et cetera. Mm-hmm. That got me excited about him. He hasn't really lived up to that at all, but hopefully the Giants can get that out of him. If anything, he's at least a great defender at second base. But for the reliever side of it, the Red Sox get another southpaw in their bullpen to spare with, to pair with Giovanni Moran behind closer Aroldis Chapman. And Miller is one of those guys, lots of strikeouts. He's had great ratios across the past three seasons, but he walks the yard pretty often. So as long as he's throwing enough strikes, I think Miller's going to be a great addition to this Red Sox bullpen.
Yeah, I think, you know, he's coming up. This is basically, July has been Miller's best, probably the best month of his career. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's been, he was amazing in July. So Giants are obviously selling high here, getting Mayer. It's, you know, a bit of a reclamation project, but like, it's definitely worth it for Eric Miller.
Yeah.
If you're a team like the Giants, you know,
you do get Miller for, I think, three more years after this. So there is a bit of club control there, but Meyer has, I think, five more years of club control after this year.
It's a funny, I mean, if you follow it, regarding the Red Sox, and I mean, the Red Sox turned down a trade for the Twins had asked if, in return for Joe Ryan, they asked for Mayer and Connolly early at the beginning of the season or in the offseason, and the Red Sox turned that down. So we've turned Joe Ryan into Mead and Eric Miller, which at the beginning of the season would not sound good. That would be horrible, but I don't know. Here we are. So
it still looks horrible because Mead is injured for the rest of the season, and Miller's just a, you know, fourth best reliever in the bullpen.
Miller's good. I mean, again, I don't hate it. I honestly don't like what the Red Sox gave up yesterday in their deals, but it does make this team better for the postseason for sure. Because they have Giovanni Moran, but he's not really a lefty out guy. He's a changeup like specialist from the left side. So Miller actually gives them that guy who can get tough lefties out. You know, before they get to Chapman in the ninth. So again, this Red Sox bullpen's been the best bullpen in baseball this year. It's been getting better and better. Yeah, I mean, been getting better and better too as each month goes on.
Oh, I see that they have a new addition to the FanGraphs roster resource team pages. And they have the like rankings. They used to have it just hitting and pitching, but now they have hitters, starting pitchers, relief pitchers, and fielding. And you're right, best ERA in baseball amongst relief pitchers, the Red Sox.
Oh, I'm seeing that. I didn't even realize that. But yeah, ERA that's and new. WHIP. And yeah, I mean, yeah,
that's pretty cool.
First, yeah.
I wish they would do strikeout rate and not K per nine, but
K per nine. Okay. Whatever. But yeah, I mean, they just. It's a good postseason, you know, looking ahead move. I don't know how it probably hurts Miller. Miller's such a weird one to figure out because July was so different because he wasn't walking guys and he was striking out everyone. We've never seen that like command from him before. So if this sticks, if this stuff sticks, and I don't know, I think this could be a really good gift for the Red Sox. Probably still going to get holds because, again, he'll be the guy getting tough lefties out.
Right.
You know, the Yankees just added some left-handed bats. The Rays did too. Like, there's tough lefties in that division and in the AL in general. So,
yeah,
he'll be used in key situations. But, yeah, Tyron Guerrero's like the fifth or sixth guy now, and he's been so good for them. Really, really deep bullpen all of a sudden, which – like 3 months ago, we were like, this bullpen's so top heavy. And now there's actual depth there for real.
Right. I think that's pretty exciting. Definitely a bullpen that will be able to handle some tough offenses in the bullpen. And you're right. Or in the postseason, you're right about the Yankees having a lot of lefties right now. Their lineup is all lefties except for Elliot Ramos and George Lombard Jr. And Elliot Ramos is going to be out of the lineup when Cody Bellinger returns. So it'll just be all lefties and George Lombard Jr. So Miller is definitely going to have his work cut out for him. Let's go to the Cubs, who placed Gavin Hallowell on the 15-day IL with shoulder inflammation. Sure. Antoine Kelly was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. I thought that was pretty interesting. Kelly was recalled from the minors the same day that the Pirates' Antoine Kelly was recalled from the minors.
What are the odds?
I was I know. What are the odds? And also, I thought that Fangraphs had just messed something up because they do that sometimes because it's all manual transactions.
Two very different. One's a lefty too, and one's like a righty who throws like 99. So right. Yeah, it's like different very guys, different spelling, different types of pitchers. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So Gavin Hollowell to the IL for the Cubs. And then in terms of trade news, they acquired Ryan Zephyrjohn from the Angels in exchange for Moises Ballesteros and starting pitcher Mason McGuire, who is the Cubs' number 19 prospect. He's now the Angels' number 15 prospect. And yes, Mason McGuire is Mark McGuire's son, the second son of a former MVP to be traded on deadline day, as I think Caden Kent was traded to the Giants in the Elliot Ramos deal. So got a couple of, you know, big stars, sons getting dealt at the deadline, but most notably for us, Ryan Zephyrjohn going to the Cubs. And that's pretty exciting because I've never really trusted the Angels pitching development to get the most out of Zephyrjohn. And there's definitely a lot to get out of him. He's somebody who struck out 34% of the batters he's faced this year, but he's walked 14% of them. Luckily, the ratios have stayed pretty good, but he should be one of the top relievers in this beleaguered, injury-prone bullpen that is currently without their closer Daniel Palencia, who's working his way back.
Yeah, it's you know, just it's kind of like the right-handed Eric Miller in a way, where it's you know big time stuff, a lot of strikeouts, but that walk rate can be a problem, and that leads to a lot of volatility. Which from Zephyrjohn for the last 2 years, we've seen peaks and valleys, and there's a huge gap in between. But when his stuff is working, and the last month he's been awesome. I mean, same just like with Eric Miller, I think both these teams are trying to sell high on these guys who are, you know, at the peak of their value right now. So, a couple hours ago, Mike Petriello tweeted out about writing about Ryan Zephyrjohn. I can't believe how many times I am referencing Mason Miller and Jacob Mizorowski here, which is Zephyrjohn has legit, like, he has, you know, insane stuff.
Yeah,
it's just that command is really, really volatile. And I think Jacob Webb's someone I would trust a little bit more in the closer role, because he's not the floor is not as deep as it is with Zephyrjohn. Right. You know, down the road maybe Zephyrjohn's a closer type, but I mean you have Palencia there, so that's kind of off the table if he's healthy. And even still, you know, reports for Palencia are pretty good. It sounds like he's going to be back in 2 to 3 weeks. So, you know, I don't think Zephyrjohn's a must add. It's kind of the same. Like, he was the closer for the Angels up until deadline day. So if you weren't rostering him then, I don't think you really have to roster him now. And save plus holds leagues probably gets, I think he gets a boost just being able to be on a team that should win a lot more games. And
right.
Probably a better situation overall in Chicago for him.
Yeah, I think that's pretty exciting. Definitely one of the few sort of upside plays that they have in their bullpen. I think
they didn't have a lot of swing and miss. Yeah, that's a guy that finally,
it's sort of like Tyler Ferguson and Caleb Thielbar were the only guys getting swings and miss, obviously Jacob Webb, but if they're relying on Trent Thornton and Ryan Rollison and Antoine Kelly with sub 10% swinging strike rates, they definitely could use the influx of whiffs from Zephyrjohn. So that's pretty exciting for the Cubs to get a controllable arm at that as well. I think Zephyrjohn still has 3 more years of club control, at least. Maybe it's through 2030, which would give them 4 more years of control. It's through 2030. Yeah. So 4 more years.
It's crazy talking about how good the Red Sox bullpen is. And Zephyrjohn should technically be in the Red Sox bullpen. They traded him. He was part of the Luis Garcia trade like 2 years ago, which was so useless. Zephyrjohn could still, but yeah, again, Red Sox have been finding, there's a couple other guys that are just having really, really good years that were former Red Sox, but that's just my Red Sox homerism standing out. But yeah, Zephyrjohn, still under the radar, but I think in Chicago people will start to recognize his name more.
I remember that Luis Garcia trade, and that's not Luis Garcia Jr. or Luis Garcia the starter. That's Luis Garcia the old reliever there for half a season. That was not spectacular. Let's go to the south side of Chicago and talk about the White Sox, who traded away Sir Anthony Dominguez to the Mariners to acquire Luis Castillo, but I think they were pretty savvy in dealing him and then immediately acquiring Huascar Brazoban in a trade with the Mets in exchange for starting pitcher Gabe Davis and reliever Zach Franklin, because you trade away a guy that I think wasn't really spectacular this year. Sir Anthony Dominguez was the closer at a certain point, but he was definitely somebody that was expendable. And you replace him with another veteran right-handed reliever that will help support a bullpen that is very reliant on Grant Taylor and a pair of lefties and Sean Newcomb and Brian Hudson. But you do that while also getting Luis Castillo in there. And I think they did a pretty good job of shifting things around without hurting this bullpen at all. And there's even an argument to say that Brazoban is better than Dominguez.
Yeah, I mean, this year he definitely has been. I think he's more consistent. You talk about floor versus ceiling. I mean, there's a higher floor with Brazoban than, you know, the ceiling might not be Sir Anthony Dominguez, but there's definitely more consistency there. And that's probably what this bullpen needs, because you already have Grant Taylor and Jordan Hicks as your top two righties, who, again, peaks and valleys with those two. You know, right now, I mean, it's still that they didn't get. I think they were kind of in the market for potentially like an actual closer. They didn't get that in Brazoban. I don't think he's going to, he might, you know, be in the mix for saves there with the other four or five guys they have. But honestly, Jordan Hicks should be the closer here. And it's not.
Whoa, you have changed your opinion on him.
Dude, the last 2 months he's been like a top 10 reliever in baseball.
Really?
Throwing his sweeper. His sweeper's not even good, but he's throwing it more. And that's like all that matters, because he's throwing harder again. He's throwing 101 now.
Okay.
So we have the velocity back. We have increased sweeper usage, and the numbers have just been insane for Hicks. Grant Taylor's been more good than bad, but like, you know, that the velocity's kind of coming down on it. He was like 96.7 the other day, which is really low for him. I'm not sure what it's going to take to get Jordan Hicks some save chances there, but he definitely deserves them the way he's been throwing the last couple
of months. I remember you talking about him at the beginning of the year, like he doesn't even need to be on a major league roster. But you're right. Since returning from the IL on June 21st, zero ERA in 14 and a third innings, five walks, 22 strikeouts. That is pretty spectacular. That is a 42% strikeout rate, sub 10% walk rate, 0.63 whip. That's very incredible for Jordan Hicks. Those are elite numbers over almost 2 months, 1.5 months for Hicks.
It's not the smallest of sample sizes. I mean, that's probably the best, like, this is probably the best sample of his career, to be honest. I know, you know, even when he was closing out games in St. Louis, he never had this type of swing and miss stuff. So,
yeah,
I don't know what the plan is there. But again, Hicks does have closing experience. He's throwing the ball extremely well right now. Maybe they don't want to, they don't want to break him and like put him in the closer role and then things fall apart. But I mean, I think he's worth a chance. I think it's worth a chance there if you're Chicago trying to find some sort of stability in the ninth inning, because they have not had that.
Sure. Let's go to the Cincinnati Reds, who were pretty quiet at the deadline. They traded away Caleb Ferguson, and that was about it. It didn't really make much sense, because we talked about it extensively that they had a lot of guys that were sort of primed to be dealt at the deadline. Like you said, sort of those depth pieces that bullpens didn't seem keen to, or that teams didn't see keen to Brock acquire Burke at this deadline. Right. Brock Burke, Pierce Johnson. I mean, even like Sam Moll.
Anton only has one more year. Yeah. TJ Anton's got one more year. Yeah. He's having a good season. I don't know. It's weird.
I thought it made sense too, because you have all of these high upside relievers that don't really have a spot in this bullpen right now because of all these veteran guys in front of them. Guys like Zach Maxwell, Luis May, Connor Phillips, all in the minors, as well as some sort of failed starters as well. Chase Petty is somebody who's in there right now, but I think he could have a bigger role at some point. But none of these guys are getting opportunities because all of these veteran guys are in there ahead of them. And I don't know why they didn't trade them. Maybe nobody was interested and these guys will get DFA'd at some point over the next couple of months. But
yeah,
I was surprised that only Caleb Ferguson got dealt in a deal that just got the Reds some cash considerations.
This might be where we missed the, remember like the old, the August, like post deadline trade, you know, those trades that happened in August. Like, this is where some of these relievers, you know, sort of move. Now it's more like, you know, these guys end up getting DFA'd and latch on somewhere for the rest of the year. But Yeah, I didn't even, you know, it's annoying when teams just kind of stand pat and don't make a decision one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
Especially
when they're not in contention at this point.
Yeah. And
1% chance to make the playoffs.
They traded Nathaniel Lowe, and
yeah,
that was really, and Caleb Ferguson, and yeah. But yeah, I would be nice to see some of those guys who have struggled but have, you know, insane stuff that like in the minors, just to see them get 2 months at the major league level, you know, get some sort of feel for what the bullpen might look like next year. But yeah, we'll have to wait and see, I guess. It's the same bullpen than it was. I mean, Caleb Ferguson wasn't doing much anyway, so it's basically the same bullpen that it was right prior to the deadline.
Yep, no real changes here in Cincinnati. We will continue moving through all of the trades from the past week, but first we're going to take a quick break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen discussing relief pitcher trades from the past week. We'll go to the Guardians, who acquired Craig Yoho from the Brewers with outfielder Blake Perkins in exchange for Cody Hoyer and catcher Bo Naylor. The Guardians traded away Hoyer. They also traded away Will Dion to the Nationals. He was a guy we talked about, I think, last week as a high upside lefty. He doesn't throw hard, but he has just a knack, ability to get strikeouts. So we'll see what he does in the Nationals. We'll talk about his impact on that bullpen lastly as we're going alphabetically through these teams. But Craig Yoho is somebody that we've been excited about for years, and he never really got his opportunity with the Brewers, and it's a little bit concerning to see the Brewers give up on him. But this is I don't know if you saw Foolish Bailey's tweet about this one, where he did like a quote tweet with the spy versus spy about this trade.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty funny, because it's like, yeah, both of these teams are really smart, and they probably think they're pulling a fast one over on the other team, because they must have their own internal metrics that suggest that either Yoho isn't good, or that Cody Hoyer or Bo Naylor are not good, whatever. Regardless, they moved on
from Cody Hoyer, but yeah.
Right, exactly. The Brewers must see a lot of, must have a lot of faith in their ability to get a lot out of Bo Naylor. But Craig Yoho, I think, is the prize of this deal. And he's really exciting going to a Guardians team that has done an incredible job of getting the most out of all of their pitchers over the past decade plus. So Craig Yoho to the Guardians. I don't think he will slot into any high leverage situations, but he's definitely somebody who will hopefully attain his potential at some point in the future there in Cleveland.
Yeah. Interesting tidbit. I think Eno Saris had tweeted this out after the Craig Yoho deal, that there's a bunch of stuff models out there, but the model that likes Craig Yoho's changeup the most is Pitching Bot, which the guy who created that was hired by the Guardians. Huh. So now Craig Yoho's there, and in his first game in Cleveland, even upped his changeup usage to, I think it was like 75% the other day.
Whoa.
So just spamming. I mean, changeup's his best pitch. We know that. It's just like, is there a good enough fastball to pair with it? Or he just, I mean, what worst case scenario, turns into Tommy Canley. He's just throwing 75 to 90% changeups, and it's a filthy pitch. I get it. And the fastball is not, it's not that bad. I think if you go with like a 60-40, 70-30% mix with that changeup leading the way, he's probably going to be fine. So,
yeah.
But yeah, interesting that the Guardians have a guy, you know, someone in their staff is really high on that changeup. So, makes a ton of sense that he landed there.
Definitely. And they get him for a long time as well. He should still have 6 more years of club control. So he's already 26, but they'll get him for his prime seasons. And I'm excited to see what Craig Yoho can do in the Guardians bullpen. They already are pretty stacked as things currently stand. We talked about guys like Franco Alamán also coming up from the minors at certain points this season, pairing with Cade Smith, Gaddis, Colin Holderman, and Eric Sabrowski has looked like one of the best relievers in baseball at certain points. So there is a lot to be excited about in that Guardians bullpen. Let's go to the Rockies, who I mentioned were surprisingly active at this trade deadline. Not only did they trade away Antonio Senzatella to the Brewers and Victor Vodnik to the Marlins, but they also acquired a relief pitching prospect in Mark Manfredi, who was acquired from the Brewers with third baseman Juan Martinez, who was unranked in the Brewer system, now the Rockies' number 26 prospect, according to MLB Pipeline, and that was in exchange for Antonio Senzatella. So Manfredi joining the Rockies minor league system. This was the only player I did not put stats on the sheet for. So looking at him now, he is a high strikeout, high walk guy, 3.35 ERA between AA and AAA this year as a 26-year-old left-handed pitcher, but he struck out 35% of the batters he's faced with an 11% walk rate. So Manfredi's
left-handed, so yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Manfredi's pretty interesting, and that's what the Rockies really need at this point, is any interesting pitcher to get attached to.
Yeah, and he's, you know, close. There's proximity to being MLB ready. They've had some interesting left-handed relief prospects that haven't. Wellington Herrera comes to mind. There's someone else too. They've had some left-handed prospect pitchers, relievers in particular, recently. They haven't worked out. Maybe Manfredi does, but it gives them some depth. Or Senzatella, who, yeah, you had to deal at the deadline for something. Yeah. So at least the past Rockies teams would have held on to Senzatella, and
right,
that would have been that. But at least they got something here. And same, yeah, Vodnik's an interesting one. So they moved on from Halverson and Vodnik in the same year. Very
right. They, you know, did.
That was the future of that bullpen, but. No,
they did not. Well, and that sort of makes sense with the new management coming in there and switching things up. And I'm glad that they did. I'm glad they're trading guys. They did call up Nick Frasso, who was the guy they got in return for Seth Halverson. So he is in that Rockies bullpen now. He was a sort of failed starter for the Dodgers, and not spectacular in the minors. Also a high strikeout, high walk rate guy. So maybe they're taking a page out of the Angels and Reds book and just going full upside play with all these guys. But we'll see. I mean, the trades don't really impact the ninth inning there in Colorado, because Jordan Romano has established himself as one of the greatest closers in Rockies history just by having a good month.
And Daniel Bard.
Right, right. I still can't believe that he leads both the Angels and Rockies in saves this year. It is ridiculous.
There's a chance that sticks, too. I don't know what the Angels are going to do.
No, I don't. I mean, it's got to be Sam Bachman, but we'll get to him. We are two teams away from the Angels, so we can ponder what that bullpen is going to look like, because they traded away four guys just on the final 3 days before the deadline. But let's go to the Tigers, who did not make any trade deadline moves involving relief pitchers. They did trade away Casey Mize. They also traded away Tarek Skubal. So don't want to say that the Tigers were not active at the deadline. But the only noticeable thing is that they recalled Zane Barnhart, or actually they acquired Zane Barnhart from the Orioles in exchange for catcher Jake Rogers. And Barnhart is a 24-year-old righty who at AA has pitched to a 4.17 ERA with a 26% strikeout rate, 11% walk rate, and he's got a 60-grade slider. So there's some potential there from Zane Barnhart, but not somebody that's, I don't know, going to knock your socks off or really have much to be said about him.
Jake Rogers at this point, yeah.
Right.
Who lasted 3 days in Baltimore before being a part of the Adley trade, so yeah.
Right.
No.
Not the most notable trade. So we'll move on to the Royals, who made some moves. They selected the contract of Aaron Bummer, who I didn't even realize that they ended up with him, but Aaron Bummer is in Kansas City now. They also acquired Carlos Duran via a trade from the Dodgers in exchange for Chris Bubich, who may have some potential to impact that Dodgers bullpen in the playoffs, but I don't think he's going to be in the rotation or in the majors at any point during the regular season. The Royals also acquired Nolan Hoffman from the Phillies in exchange for starting pitcher Manuel Colon and cash considerations. And surprisingly, they designated Matt Strom for assignment. And that is, that's very surprising. I mean, who did they traded Matt Strom?
Jonathan Bolton, baby. Right. I mean, at the time, I said it was a terrible trade for the Royals, and everyone, the consensus was that was a great trade for the Royals, and that might come back to haunt them, because Strom has been terrible all year. They didn't even get anything for him at the deadline. Just a waste. Yeah, Bolin would be their closer easily right now.
Big mistake, especially because now Strom is off the roster and Jonathan Bolin has taken further steps in that Phillies bullpen. But the guys that they acquired are pretty interesting. I mean, Duran's one of those high strikeout, high walk rate guys that rarely work out, but they do have a lot of potential. I think Hoffman is also pretty decent, and Bummer should definitely help a bullpen that could use some help. But it's not like these are going to be guys that become fantasy relevant in 2026.
Not likely. I mean, yeah, Duran's definitely interesting. Just hasn't. I think he's got a huge command issues. Stuff is there though, and you know, yeah, you're not. I mean, Bubic probably wasn't getting. Bubic was. You might as well get something for him at this point. So, but yeah, I this bullpen is still. I'm surprised Schreiber. Like I said before, Schreiber didn't get moved. I thought someone would have give up something for him. He's a free agent to be. So I guess he's still in that bullpen, but I think, you know, moving forward, it's gotta be Steven Cruz as the closer here. Hopefully
it won't be, it's probably going to be Lucas Urseg.
If they give Urseg another save chance this season, I don't care what the situation is. I mean, Quartararo is, yeah. I don't know if he's the one making these moves and these decisions, or if it's someone else in the team organization making these moves or making these decisions, but the closer, I mean, no one has mismanaged the closer situation
he would put injured Carlos Estevez in the ninth inning right now,
probably. Like he's throwing 90 miles per, that's fine, we'll take him at 90, we'll take him when his March self back,
right? Yeah, I would love to see Steven Cruz take off in that bullpen, but I don't have any faith in Quartararo pulling that one off. So we can only cross our fingers at this point. Let's move over to the Angels. And this was one of the busiest teams on deadline day. They traded away Joe Adell, Jose Soriano, and they traded away four relievers over the past few days. They also traded away Logan Ohapi, which, very funnily, my girlfriend was on Instagram and somebody posted on their story like this really like heartfelt song with like saying goodbye to Logan Ohapi from the Angels. And I was like, what the heck? That's like, he's not even been good. He's been a replacement level player for 4 years for the Angels. He's been injured most of the time. What a weird player to be so connected to. But, you know, everybody's got their, just like everybody's got their favorite Pokemon, everybody's got a favorite baseball player. Somebody is somebody's favorite baseball player everywhere. Yeah, even if it's just their mom, everybody is somebody's favorite baseball player. But let's talk about the relievers that were traded away out of this Angels bullpen. We'll go into more depth of their impact on their outgoing bullpens, but with the Angels trading away Chase Silseth, Kirby Yates, Ryan Zephyrjohn, and Brent Suter, there is a clear absence in this bullpen. They did try to address it by getting two guys into the majors. One of them, pretty interesting, Luke Murphy, selected from the minors, 26-year-old righty at AA, 0.71 ERA, 0.82 WHIP, 32% strikeout rate, 7% walk rate. So some potential there from Luke Murphy. He's already pitched in the majors, so I took a look at his fastball. The FanGraphs gave him a 60 grade fastball, but it's a 95 mile per hour two plane four seamer with third percentile PLV. So I don't know where they got that grade from. But I think the most exciting transaction here for the Angels is Ben Joyce is back, activated from the 60-day IL after missing the whole season following shoulder surgery that he underwent in April of 2025. And Roster Resource has all the confidence that Ben Joyce is locked into that closer role moving forward.
Do they really?
Yeah, they got him as the closer. Sam Bachman set up with Sammy Natero Jr. setting up as well. I mean, if there's anybody I'm going to put my faith in right now, I guess it's Ben Joyce, but I want to see him pitch a couple times at least before I do that.
I mean, yeah, the minor league rehab stint was not great. We've only really seen, I mean, not to mention, like, he needs to be healthy, but we've only seen, like, spurts of him being, you know, truly great at the MLB level too. So I guess they are in a situation here where Bachman has been really bad lately and also maybe hurt because he left the last outing, said it was just fatigue, but still that's a concern. Without a doubt, the closer here should be Sammy Natera Jr. He is absolutely filthy. I don't care that he's left-handed. He is Jacob Latt's level nastiness. I think they should give Natera a chance. I don't think they will because this is the Angels. They've been doing some smart things lately. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe they'll surprise and give Natera a chance. But yeah, I mean, that's just like, you know, if Joyce was dominating in his rehab, like, all right, yeah, come back. It just feels, I don't know. I don't love that idea. I would rather, you know, let him get some relief, middle relief outings in first, see how he feels, right, see how he looks. But yeah, I mean, it's tough because Bachman hasn't been great. I mean, Jose Fermin's been pretty good too. I think between Fermin and Natera, they have something there. And if Bachman's healthy too, but yeah, I'm not getting too excited about Ben Joyce just yet. We'll see what happens. But yeah, I think there's a ways to go until he actually fully would take over that closer role, if he does take it at all. Even before, I mean, it's a different management, different manager, but like they did not really love using Ben Joyce as the closer. I remember that was a big argument for, I forget who was it, who was getting saves over him. It was like, there was like really odd guys getting saves over Ben Joyce when he was like pitching well. So yeah, we'll see how things work. It's just hard to trust him, because you know, how many innings are we going to get? Is he going to be healthy the rest of the year? Is he going to be healthy next year? Who knows? He's just always injured.
Yeah. Who was getting saves for them back then? I am trying to look it up right now, but I do know what you're talking about. Carlos Estevez.
Yeah, that makes sense. That was before he went to Philly. Yeah.
Yeah. I forgot that he was on the Angels. I only think of him as a Rocky.
Yeah, even after that, it was like it's on the tip of my tongue too. I'll figure it out at some point, but yeah, it's
in 2024.
I think so. We'll see. You know,
because there was Luis Garcia was getting saves.
That could have been it. That checks a box.
Roansy Contreras. That's 2024. Maybe you're thinking before that.
23. It could have been 23 when he came up.
23. Yeah. Jose Quijada.
That's who I was thinking of, the lefty. Yes, that's what I was thinking of.
Yeah, well, I think Ben Joyce, hopefully he still is throwing like 100 miles per hour, because that's what made him such an exciting guy. Yeah. Pitching for the Volunteers in college. But we'll see. I mean, he's definitely got a lot of potential if he can throw strikes and he can stay healthy. And he was also somebody that, even before the injury, he wasn't somebody that was able to parlay his velocity into strikeouts. So
yeah,
if he doesn't have the strikeouts and he's a pitch to contact guy, then he's not really a closer either. So I think you're spot on with Sammy Nataro Jr. And I think you're spot on in assuming that the Angels probably won't get this one right. Let's stick in LA and go to the Dodgers, who traded away a couple of high strikeout, high walk, failed sort of starters in Chase McDermott and Carlos Duran. But they had some more notable IL placements and IL activations, as they activated Edwin Diaz from the 60-day IL after he missed the last 3+ months after undergoing surgery to remove loose bodies from his right elbow. Charlie Barnes was designated for assignment in a corresponding move. Then they had some IL placements. Brock Stewart to the 15-day IL. What a surprise. Shoulder tendonitis for Stewart. That guy just cannot stay healthy. Cole Irvin was selected from the minors in a corresponding move. That guy's still around. And they placed Will Klein on the 15-day IL with elbow discomfort. That one seems more like a phantom IL stint at this point. Kyle Hurt was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move, so he's back. And to cap all of the moves for the Dodgers, they traded away Jack Sawinski to the Rays in exchange for Hunter Fiducia. And then they got a throw-in reliever in there. Of course they did. 23-year-old righty Jacob Kamatz, K-M-A-T-Z, at high A and double A this year. 2.89 ERA, 0.92 whip, 36% strikeout rate, 5% walk rate, 70 grade curveball from Kamatz. And I'm sure the Dodgers are going to turn him into another elite reliever.
For Jack Sawinski.
Right. Yeah. Who's like a three true outcome quad A type guy.
This is how the Dodgers, this is partially how the Dodgers do it. Obviously, partially it's because they spend money, but also they make savvy moves around the trade deadline that you don't even think it's going to impact them. It is not going to impact them this year, but down the road when Kamatz turns into the next Jack Dwyer or Will Klein, you know, like,
right. They acquired Klein at last year's deadline. And we talked about it like, oh my God, I cannot believe they got away with just getting this. And that, you know, it took nothing. It took pennies. And now he was one of their best relievers all year. Yeah. And I could see that happening with Kamatz in a couple of years.
And they're going to turn that 70 grade curveball. He's just going to spam that thing. And just, yeah, he's going to be nasty for them. So that's going to be fun. But yeah, I guess the big news here is Edwin Diaz is back. And he's only thrown twice since returning. I don't know, man. It's not the same Edwin Diaz that I think we've been, you know, accustomed to seeing. Partially a command thing, partially the stuff's just not where it used to be. Even I was hoping this long IL stint would get him right, and the Dodgers would make sure he's back to like 100% when he came back. But yeah, just still still a little questionable. I want to, maybe he just needs to pitch more, get into a groove here. But yeah, I'm a little skeptical. You know, obviously the upside's immense if he's right, but yeah, there's at least I think 10, there's like 10 other relievers, or at least maybe more, that are pitching so well right now that it's hard to put him above them, as much as crazy as it sounds. But yeah, little questionable right, what Edwin Diaz is going to be like the rest of the year.
Yeah, and then there's the competition from the rest of that bullpen, is super deep. And Tanner Scott has not been, he does not seem like he's going to be fantasy viable since Edwin Diaz was recalled, because they've used him in seventh, eighth inning since then.
So just, it's all over the place. And then, you know, this is the one place where Diaz, like, you know, if it doesn't work out, the Dodgers won't hesitate to just move on and, you know, go back to Scott in the ninth or do whatever. They have so many options. So they're going to give Diaz a chance, but if it's not working out, you know, in a couple weeks or a month from now, you know, maybe we see some roles change there.
George Lombard Jr. just homered in his first big league game. That's pretty exciting for Yankees fans, but yeah, that is, that's what's going on in LA. Edwin Diaz is back. Let's go to the Marlins, who traded away Lake Backer, which I think was a smart trade. And then they also brought in a couple of relievers. They sort of towed the line between seller and buyer, as they are above 500, but 17.5% chance to make the playoffs. They acquired Brandon Bidois via trade from the Pirates with outfielder Brian Sanchez and third baseman Hyung Sung Lee in exchange for Lake Backer. So they get a controllable reliever back for Backer. And they activated Josh Eknis from the 60-day IL after he's missed the past 2 months with a calf strain. And they acquired Victor Vodnik from the Rockies in exchange for Connor Norby and starting pitcher Aiden May, who was the Marlins' number 27 prospect. He's now unranked. So bringing in some controllable relievers and trading away just one.
Yeah. I know. I think the Bakar move is very interesting. I was like, why are they doing that? But you're getting Bidois plus back for that. I'm like, okay, I see it now. That's, again, Bidois fits like perfectly with the Marlins being huge. That bullpen's all about being huge, you know, stuff plus guys. Like Bidois fits right in with the Eknises and the Kempners and Nardi and Peterson. Like, all, you know, there's a huge stuff plus guy there in Bidois.
It didn't feel like that was the area of the 2027 Marlins that needed to be addressed, but Vodnik and Bidois to pair with like all those other high upside guys that we've sort of dreamed on Vodnik this season. Too. Right. Yeah. Right.
So very, very Marlins-y relievers, Bidois and Vodnik here. And then, you get Eknis back, which is, I didn't even know he was close to returning. So that's cool. So Anthony Bender should be back soon too. And you're starting to get that bullpen healthy. I think, they did a decent job. The Pirates were, really hungry for. I think Bakar is going to replace Majinski as that, like, multi-inning reliever for them, since Majinski has to go back to the rotation. So
with Keller on the IL,
I kind of like what the Marlins did with these reliever moves, at least an interesting overall trade deadline for them, with giving up on Liam Hicks. This early,
Was smart. They got Joe Mack, so.
Yeah, they have Matt. I think the left. Selling high on Liam Hicks. I won't argue with that. So,
but it is scary to have him go to the Rays.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah,
like they're gonna do something crazy with them.
Yeah, I know. So, but yeah, I mean, the Marlins bullpen, once they get healthy, really looks very good. There's a lot of depth there now. With again, Eknis, Bidois, and Kempner have
it's multiple endless options. So. It is endless. They'll get Ronnie Henriquez back next year. They'll get Bender back at some point. Andrew Nardi. There's all kinds of guys in the minors as well. Josh White. So I'm excited for that Marlins bullpen next year. That one's definitely going to be one that I sort of suggest is going to be the big breakout bullpen. And really curious to see what Victor Vodnik looks like outside of Colorado. Let's go to the Brewers, who traded away both Cody Hoyer and Craig Yoho, who we've talked about already. They acquired Cody Hoyer via trade from the Guardians and the Bo Naylor trade that also sent Yoho and Perkins to the Guardians. But they also added to their bullpen, acquiring Jojo Romero via trade from the Cardinals in exchange for outfielder Alex Frias, who was the Brewers' number 11 prospect, now the Cardinals' number 4 prospect, and outfielder Josiah Ragsdale, the Brewers' number 13 prospect, now the Cardinals' number 10 prospect. Both of those outfielders have had impressive minor league numbers, so it was a big package to give up, but they also got Dustin May in as well, along with Jojo Romero, so it must have been worth it. But along with the Southpaw, the Brewers will also bring in a former Rockies reliever, Antonio Senzatella, who they acquired in exchange for third baseman Juan Martinez, who was an unranked Brewers prospect, now the Rockies' number 26 prospect, and minor league reliever Mark Manfredi. So Jojo Romero and Antonio Senzatella added to the Brewers bullpen.
Yeah, you know, Romero's still in the IL. He should be back in a couple weeks from that appendectomy. Senzatella, I guess, you know, gives them – that's feels very Brewers-y. Like, what are they going to do? What are they going to do with him? What, I feel like they'll do something here. You know, Senzatella, his breaking balls are pretty good. His fastball's been up velocity-wise this year. but, yeah, I don't know if either one of them makes a huge impact for any sort of fantasy – even in holds leagues. When Romero comes back, he's still, you know, Ashby, maybe they move Ashby back into like the role he had prior to, you know, moving into the seventh inning setup role. Maybe they give Romero that role and Ashby can be more of a floater, can pitch earlier in games. Yeah. And then you have, you know, you already have Patrick who can do that, and Senzatella as well, I guess. So, yeah, just depth for this bullpen, but nothing really that sticks out.
I mean, it's somewhat interesting for them to be interested in Senzatella at all. I mean, he was a guy who was looking incredible at the beginning of the season, and he sort of regressed throughout the season where his numbers don't look that spectacular anymore. But if the Brewers are interested in somebody, you have to assume they either see validity in their performance thus far, or they think they can get something else out of them. So, I mean, if he was throwing harder this year and also they had Joel Kunal come in and throw 100 miles per hour, maybe they can get Antonio Senzatella to do something crazy.
They also, I mean, yeah, they've done it before with, who was it? They brought in Nick Mears from the Rockies a couple of years ago too. Mm-hmm. So maybe, yeah, they feel like they got something out of Mears there for a little while before it kind of fell apart for him. But yeah, maybe they see something there with Senzatella, and yeah, I'm sure the Brewers would get the most out of him.
All right, let's go to the Twins, a club that dealt basically all their relievers at last year's trade deadline, which sort of hamstrung them this season. I think they would have done a lot better if their bullpen wasn't blowing so many saves this year, but they have decided to address that with a 29% chance to make the playoffs. They're going in, and they acquired a pair of relievers. AJ Minter was acquired from the Mets in exchange for shortstop Bruin Agbayani. I assume that's Benny Agbayani's son. It is. He was an unranked Twins prospect, now the Mets number 29 prospect. They also gave up third baseman Billy Amick, and they acquired Jeff Hoffman from the Blue Jays with cash considerations in exchange for starting pitcher Dassin Hill, who was the Twins number 7 prospect, now the Blue Jays number 6 prospect, starting pitcher John Klein, the Twins number 17 prospect, now the Blue Jays number 25 prospect, and second baseman Demuri Pena. It took a lot more to get Hoffman than Minter, not only because he's a better reliever, but also because they will still have one more year of club control as he's still working through that contract he signed with the Blue Jays. But these are some great additions to the Twins bullpen that already acquired Tommy Nance earlier in July. So some additions to a bullpen that really needed them. And now it feels like a decently strong bullpen, from one of the worst in baseball to a pretty strong one. And do you think Hoffman just slots right into that closer role? I mean, he's been the most unlucky reliever this year, but Yoenis Gomez has established himself as a trustworthy arm in that Twins bullpen.
I mean, Gomez is starting to show some cracks. I honestly was starting to lean towards maybe Andrew Morris taking over that role until they went out and got Jeff Hoffman. So, yeah, okay. I think Hoffman should be pretty safely, and he should be the closer there, no doubt. And I imagine given what they gave up to get him, that's going to be the case. And yeah, it's still that bullpen all of a sudden, you know, very questionable at the beginning of the year. But now between Hoffman, Minter, they already went out and got Tommy Nance. And then, you know, Gomez and Morris have established themselves as legit options. And Taylor Rogers still has something left. So there's a solid bullpen here all of a sudden. And they're going to need it for any sort of playoff run because, the lineup and rotation do have some cracks, some holes in it. So, yeah, this bullpen needs to be steady for them. So, yeah, I imagine Hoffman slides right into the closer role. And this team has been providing, like, when they are winning games, they're one of those teams that the games are close. It's very, you know, they've been getting plenty of opportunities for Gomez to get saves. So Hoffman should be in a pretty good spot here. Yeah, I think it's a good fit for him too. I feel like get him out of Toronto, fresh start.
I'm so excited to see him out of Toronto.
Yeah,
not because they were doing anything wrong, but that just the luck there was not working for him.
Yeah, and you get out of the AL East, and this feels good. I'm cautiously optimistic about this Hoffman placement.
Right. I like the two acquisitions that the Twins made. I think AJ Minter is pretty underrated too. Even before the injury, he was one of the most consistent relievers in baseball, and he's been great this year, 2.22 ERA in 25 games. But I think Hoffman is probably the highest upside reliever traded at the deadline. He's somebody that could become a top 10 at the very least closer in baseball if he achieves this potential. I mean, he's got some of the best underlying metrics in baseball. He strikes out a ton of batters. If he can just avoid the home runs, avoid the BABIP issues, he should be pretty awesome for the Twins. So excited to see a change of scenery for Jeff Hoffman. Next, we'll move forward and talk about the Mets, Yankees, Phillies, Pirates, and et cetera, more all the rest of the teams. But first, we're going to take another break here on In the Pen. And we're back, Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen, discussing all of the trades that happened prior to the trade deadline. Let's go from the Twins to the Mets, who were sellers at the deadline, pretty obviously. And unlike some of the other teams that had a lot of relievers that were rentals and sort of held on to them, the Mets did not. They were like, anybody that's not locked down is going. They traded away four relievers: AJ Minter, Luke Weaver, Brooks Raley, Huascar Brazoban. All four of them are now not on the Mets, but they'll bring in some relievers to replace them. Seonel Perez will not be one of them. He was placed on the 15-day IL with a forearm strain. Jonathan Pintara was recalled and then optioned back to the minors in a corresponding move. But they did get Chase McDermott from the Dodgers in exchange for catcher Ben Rortfett. McDermott was a failed starter for the Orioles, traded to the Dodgers, who I thought he was going to like become some ridiculous reliever for the Dodgers. That didn't pan out. So we'll see what he can do with the Mets. He was recalled from the minors after being acquired, so he is currently in that Mets bullpen. They also acquired Zach Franklin from the White Sox with Gabe Davis in exchange for Huascar Brazoban. I think that was a pretty savvy trade this like old controllable reliever for a relatively young reliever, 27-year-old Zach Franklin at AAA, 4.37 ERA, 1.13 whip, 32% strikeout rate, 8% walk rate. He's got a 60 grade fastball. And then I think it gets more exciting from there. I think the last three transactions here for the Mets are probably the most exciting. They recalled Jeffrey Yan, and that's the guy who's known for his eccentric strikeout celebrations in the minors and in Japan, where he will strike a guy out and then squat all the way down and then jump as high as he can. That kind of stuff. I love that. He's a 29-year-old southpaw at AA and AAA this year, 3.24 ERA, 44% strikeout rate, but a 16% walk rate. So high ceiling, low floor for Jeffrey Yan. They also activated Deadmiel Nunez from the 60-day IL after he missed all season recovering from Tommy John surgery. That was one of the most promising relievers in the Mets bullpen prior to his injury. And they selected the contract of Nate Lavender, who was a Rule 5 draft pick by the Rays, but they returned him to the Mets. And the 26-year-old southpaw Lavender has pitched to a 3.77 ERA across three levels in the minors with a 40% strikeout rate and a single-digit walk rate. So lots of moves in this Mets bullpen. I mean, it doesn't change the closer role, but how are you seeing the setup situation shaken out in Queens?
Yeah, I mean, it's good to see Nunez back. It's been a while. If he's healthy and the guy he was prior to the injury, I mean, he should be the eighth inning guy for them pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Duarte's been pitching well for them too. That's the only other guy I would suggest. But those two lefties and Yan and Lavender, I think there might be something there with one of them at least, you know, if one of them hits. I'm just waiting for Yan to like blow his hamstring out doing one of those celebrations. But yeah, I mean, Lavender is certainly interesting as well with that strikeout rate at AAA or in throughout the whole minors. So
right.
The Mets are going to probably be pretty ugly the rest of the way, but you know, hopefully if you have Devin Williams, they can find some guys to get the ball to him in the ninth. Cause yeah, it might be tough to get save situations as is for the Mets.
Yeah, but definitely exciting to see some new names in that bullpen. Hopefully they are able to achieve their potential. I'm really rooting for Yan, and some of the other guys really excite me. So hopefully the Mets can get the most out of these guys. Let's stick in New York and go to the Yankees. They didn't acquire anybody, but they traded away Camilo Doval, Jake Bird, and Yovani Cruz. Those are some high upside relievers. I'm excited to see.
Ben Grable, too, in that.
Yeah, he's a reliever, trade. Right? He's a prospect.
Like
he has
a reliever pitch. Prospect only, but yeah. he's like really, he's really good for reliever prospects. So this is the team where I'm like, what, you traded away four like relievers who could help you this year, like four depth guys. And you didn't bring anything in. So no. We're just like Paul Blackburn's going to be a key reliever now for,
yeah,
I don't know. It's just weird. Again, teams like the Yankees, they almost always go out and get multiple relievers at the deadline. So to see them trade away three guys with major league relief depth, you know, here, and then Grable, who probably could have helped them this year as well. Very interesting that they didn't bring anything in. And Cruz is already a sketchy guy to trust. Brent Hedrick's having a career year, but is that going to last for the next 2 months, 3 months?
Right.
They're banking on one of those starters to become a really good reliever, it seems. Yeah, and
like Warren or Weathers you're talking about?
Yeah, so I feel like this bullpen in October, I don't know, man. It's very sketchy.
I mean, how healthy is Carlos LaGrange right now? I know he's on the injured list right now, but I guess it's LeGrand Hay, but if he's resumed the throwing program as of July 28th. So
it's like not a guy you can bank on. It's nice depth. It's like,
I just assume that's part of their plan as they go, okay, well, we can trade away these guys to open up some 40-man roster spots, and then we can move one of Warren or Weathers to the bullpen to have some reinforcements there. And then we can promote, like, I don't know, Luis Hill, Carlos LaGrange. They still have Angel Chavilla.
See what Chavilla did last night. Now he's gone. Well,
he gave up a bunch of. Did he give like up the home run to? Probably Alec Burleson.
At least one to Alec Burleson. Yeah.
Yeah, he had three.
Now was Chavilla a guy that they like had actual faith in, or I don't know. It's just a very. I mean, Paul Blackburn, man, is going to have a big role there in that.
I know.
I don't know.
I mean, I trust like Bednar and Hedrick, but outside of that, it's all pretty sketchy. I mean, Cruz has been, you know, reliable, but he's somebody that's volatile. You know, the whip's going to be a splitter guy.
Yeah, the whip's going to be a nightmare every now and then for Cruz. So, yeah.
Definitely a questionable trade deadline for the Yankees, but hey, at least they got Elliot Ramos, and I do like the Luis Garcia Jr. trade. I think,
that's a good fit.
Underrated, but the bullpen definitely could have used some help and definitely didn't need to be dealt from. So that's what the Yankees are doing. And I don't think as a Red Sox fan, you're that mad about it. So let's move to Phillies.
Yeah.
Let's move to the Phillies, who traded away Nolan Hoffman and Seth Johnson, both of whom we've talked about. But they did bring in some reinforcements that I sort of like. I mean, they needed some reinforcements with Brad Keller out for the season, Tanner Banks on the 60-day IL as well. But they acquired Caleb Killian from the Giants alongside Luis Arraez in exchange for starting pitcher Ramon Marquez, who was the Phillies' number four prospect, now the Giants' number seven prospect, and reliever prospect Marty Gaer. They also acquired Brooks Raley from the Mets in exchange for outfield prospect John Spikerman. Very cool name, Spikerman. He was the I'm seeing Spider-Man after this. That's pretty close. He is the Phillies' number 27 prospect, now the Mets' number 28 prospect. They also got starting pitching prospect Luke Gabrysch. So Brooks Raley and Caleb Killian added to this bullpen. I think Brooks Raley is better than Killian, but Killian's probably got more upside. He's also got a few more years of control as well. How do you see this bullpen shaking out? I definitely think they needed to make these moves with the injury to Keller.
Yeah, it's not the big the big fish that they were kind of talking about, Jeff Hoffman. But I mean, at least in Killian, I think the hope is that between, you know, Killian, Bolin, and Kirkring, like at least two of those guys can give you respectable innings.
Yeah.
In the postseason. And then Rayleigh, I mean, they have Alvarado. They have, like, you know, Alvarado is like the volatile high upside lefty, but Rayleigh gives them some sort of steady left-handed option. Who can actually go out and get lefties. So that's, you know, again, that's a definitely a position, definitely a need for them. I know Tim Mays has been pitching pretty well for them, but Rayleigh is still an upgrade. So, these are good additions. I don't know. Maybe they needed a little bit more, but I still, you know, top to bottom, this bullpen's pretty deep, all things considered.
Right. I mean, and if you think so highly of Jonathan Bolin as we do, I feel pretty strongly about this bullpen because Yoan Duran's like a top three closer. And then I think the setup options are pretty good. And Rayleigh has been one of the most consistent and underrated relievers in baseball throughout his career. So he's been, you know, sub three ERA basically for each of the past six seasons or something like that. And he's been pitching great again this year with a sub two ERA. So I think that's some pretty like straightforward, just solid additions to the Phillies bullpen. And they also got Luis Arraez, which I think is a good trade all around there. Let's go to the Pirates. And I think if we were to say which team upgraded their bullpen the most, I think the easy answer would be the Pirates. They brought in everybody.
They made the most moves. Yeah,
definitely, for sure. They traded away Brandon Bidwa and Hunter Stratton, but those weren't really too important to this bullpen. They also made a bunch of like call-ups and call-downs over the past couple of weeks, or the past week. I think the funniest one, I think, was it like Eichert? Brandon Eichert was optioned to the minors, recalled from the minors, optioned to the minors, recalled from the minors, and optioned to the minors like three times
in the past week. Yeah.
It's pretty funny. But they did settle on a few relievers that they acquired. They acquired four relievers at the deadline, the Pirates did, starting with Camilo Duvall from the Yankees in exchange for catcher Omar Alfonso, who was the Pirates' number 17 prospect, now the Yankees' number 26 prospect, and outfielder Luis Cruz. They also acquired the aforementioned Lake Backer from the Marlins in exchange for Brandon Bidwa, outfielder Brian Sanchez, and third baseman Hyung Sung Lee. They also got Kirby Yates from the Angels in exchange for starting pitching prospect Kyle Robinson. And lastly, the most notable one, Luke Weaver was acquired from the Mets in exchange for shortstop Sammy Stafura, who was the Pirates' number 9 prospect, now the Mets' number 11 prospect. They also got a relief pitching prospect, Andrew Moore, via trade from the Padres in exchange for Hunter Stratton. He's a 26-year-old righty, 3.46 ERA at AA and AAA, 35% strikeout rate, but a 24% walk rate. So definitely some control issues for Andrew Moore. But man, this bullpen looks completely different after this past weekend.
Yeah, and yesterday the Pirates did play, and they, you know, I think they went Soto came in the sixth and the seventh, and then Duvall in the eighth, and then Montgomery was nasty in the ninth inning. And it's like, you know, you get Luke Weaver, if I had to place a bet on this, I would say Luke Weaver is going to be the closer. Right. But like, if I was in charge of this, I would probably want to ride with Montgomery for a little bit here. You know, let Weaver and Soto be like my two setup guys who have had really good success doing that. And then, you know, Duvall and Yates and Bakar are nice depth. Eventually they'll get Evan Sisk back as well. It's really good. There's a lot of upside in this bullpen. Johan Ramirez too. I mean, like, the stuff is not an issue in this bullpen. It's going to be interesting to just see how all the pieces fit. Again, now you have, even with Duvall and Yates, I mean, a ton of closer experience with Duvall, right. Yates, and even Weaver had some experience closing out games. So I don't know. I still think Weaver's probably the fact that, you know, I don't know. I just feel like he's going to be the closer, or he's going to at least get a chance to close. But Montgomery's pitching so well right now. It's tough to pull him out of that role, but
I feel like if I had to guess, they're probably going to do some sort of committee with Weaver and Montgomery, probably a platoon. Yeah. That makes the most sense. Or like, Weaver's going to be that high leverage arm and he's going to move around where he's probably going to split saves, but they'll still use him in the seventh and eighth.
Yeah. I mean, that could be the case. Yeah. I could see it going a bunch of different ways. They have so many options now. It's definitely improved. They needed a right-handed bullpen help, and they got it. So
Right.
Yeah, we'll just see how everything fits now.
Right. And they do get some club control here as well. They get Doval for next year. They get Backer for five more years. Kirby Yates will be a free agent after this year, but Luke Weaver has one more year on his contract. So this bullpen should be strong next year again. And honestly, I really love what the Pirates did here. They sort of went all in, and this has been a club that hasn't gone all in recent years. They only have a 24% chance to make the playoffs. They're at 500 right now, but these are plays towards the future as well that also helps them this year. And they didn't need help in the lineup. That lineup is much improved this year. The rotation is absolutely electric, and the only area of need was the bullpen, and they addressed it. And you got to love what the Pirates are doing right now. And I love how active they were at the deadline. Let's go to the Padres, who were active at the deadline, but not in the relief pitcher area. There was lots of talk about the potential of a Mason Miller or an Adrian Mora home trade. Neither of those happened, but they did activate Jeremiah Estrada from the 15-day IL after he missed 2 months with knee inflammation. Matt Waldron was unfortunately designated for assignment. I hope a team picks him up because we need at least one knuckleballer in baseball. But Jeremiah Estrada back to that bullpen. That Padres bullpen is nearing full strength, but Jason Adam, I think, was transferred to the 60-day IL, so they're probably not going to get him back in anytime soon. But Miller, Morjon, Estrada, Matsui, Bradley Rodriguez, and keeps going from there with more underwhelming names after that. But that's a pretty good top five.
Yeah. I'm a little skeptical on Estrada. He still doesn't look right. The velocity is still way down. Not sure what the underlying issue here. It's almost kind of like Brian Abreu, but it's not as bad. Abreu was very lost at the beginning of the year.
Right.
Now he looks better now. That's great. I actually do like what Abreu has been doing, but Estrada still, velocity still down over 2 miles per hour. Command is all over the place. I feel like there's something else going on there. Worst case scenario, again, like they have Bradley Rodriguez, who can be that next setup guy for them. Behind Morjon and Miller, but interesting deadline for them. I honestly thought that they might go add somebody, like add a reliever, just the way Preller operates. Like, you never know. They added Mason Miller last year. That was, you know, they already had
They had Robert Suarez.
Yeah. So, we'll see. It's good enough bullpen for them. It's definitely not going to be the issue if they don't make the playoffs.
Right. All right. Well, that's the Padres bullpen. Not many changes there. We'll go to the Mariners bullpen, which also didn't change much. They didn't really need it, but they traded away Alex Hoppe, but they did get Sir Anthony Dominguez via trade from the White Sox with catcher Boston Smith, who was the White Sox number 15 prospect, now the Mariners number 14 prospect. I'm pretty sure the White Sox got Boston Smith in a trade recently. What was that trade? From the Red Sox. Was that the Curtis Meade trade?
Boston Smith?
Yeah.
You're just thinking Boston Red Sox. Yeah, I don't think he was ever a part of...
Huh? I'm pretty sure
he was. Oh, was Boston Smith the guy that they traded? Okay, Curtis Meade went to... Yeah, that could be it.
Yeah, let me see. Yes, that was correct.
Okay. I got you now. Yeah.
Okay. So Boston Smith had already been traded at this deadline once. He is now on the Mariners. The Mariners had to give up Luis Castillo. They also got outfielder Nolan Jones. He's still kicking around, but we'll focus on Sir Anthony Dominguez, who will join this Mariners bullpen as one of the top setup options until Matt Brash returns. I think that will shift things up a little bit, allow Dominguez to be in more low leverage situations. But I mean, Sir Anthony Dominguez is Sir Anthony Dominguez, walks a lot of guys, strikes out a lot of guys. He's a little bit volatile, but I think he is good to be in a bullpen where he is not counted on as being the top guy.
Yeah, I think that should help him. And then going to T-Mobile also helps for sure. So yeah, I mean, good landing spot for Sir Anthony Dominguez. Just he's not going to get saves. And he's not like he was getting saves anyway in Chicago. It's been a while, but
right.
He's certainly not going to get any in Seattle.
All right. Well, that's the Mariners bullpen. They got Sir Anthony Dominguez. Let's go to the Giants, who traded away Caleb Killian and Eric Miller. They brought aboard a relief pitching prospect, Marty Gare, from the Phillies, alongside starting pitcher Ramon Marquez, who was the Phillies' number 4 prospect, now the Giants' number 7 prospect. That was in the Luis Arias, Caleb Killian trade. Gare's pretty interesting, 23-year-old righty at low A and high A, 4.50 ERA, 1.17 whip, 45% strikeout rate, but a 15% walk rate. He's got a 70-grade fastball, but a few years away from the majors at this point. I think the most notable thing to talk about here is that the top two closing options for the Giants were dealt, and both of those guys had a lot of control left. So they weren't really guys we were expecting to be traded. So with Miller and Killian gone, how do you see the ninth inning shaking out for the Giants?
Yeah, I mean, I think even still, like, all things considered, the Giants did pretty good with getting, you know, they got a pretty good return for Killian and Reyes, and then getting Mayer for Miller. Pretty good job for Buster Posey, all things considered. But, you know, the bullpen now is, again, back to square one.
square zero.
Square, yeah. And this is one where it might be crazy, but, like, I mean, Dylan Smith's the only guy here that makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, so I feel like he's got to be the closer, and it's, you know, it's the point where there's so many other questionable bullpens right now that I had Dylan Smith inside my top 25 because I just, like, there's there's no other option here. I mean, Keaton Wynn's been terrible since he came back. He doesn't, stuff is not what it used to be or what it was at the beginning of the year. You know, Sam Henkes and Brubaker have some of the worst stuff metrics in all of baseball, and there's
nice.
I mean, they've been pitching okay, but, like, Their stuff's terrible. They're gonna revert back to, you know, being terrible at some point here.
Right.
Jason Foley hasn't looked good. I mean,
I was thinking about Foley too because he's the only one with closing experience.
Looks bad. Stuff's down. Really, yeah, they've gone from all. I think they are now the worst bullpen in baseball. You know, obviously giving up your two guys who are kind of holding them together.
Yeah,
and Killian and Miller.
Well, there was an argument with the Nationals and the Twins until the Twins like added a couple awesome guys, and the Nationals like it seemed like their focus at the deadline this year was getting
all
relievers, right?
Yeah, so, I think now the Giants are the worst bullpen in baseball. I think that's common. I mean, Dylan Smith's kind of. I like Dylan Smith, but like,
me too.
He's like their Clayton Beater, and there's the behind that. It's a bunch of question marks.
Well, hopefully they give him a chance to establish himself because, I mean, he's going to have a competition next year with like Randy Rodriguez. Maybe
Brian
Wick will be cool and Joel Piguero will be back. So there's potential for next year. But yeah, right now it's looking pretty bleak. I wish we could get Reggie Crawford up at some point. That would be cool. Just don't bring Ryan Walker back because I know they're itching to do it.
It's funny that they brought up all these guys. And not one of them is Ryan Walker. Yeah.
They were like, let's get Tristan Beck and San Martin back and Carson Seymour.
Yeah.
No Ryan Walker. Oof.
That's rough.
Yeah. Well, I would be staying far away from this bullpen in fantasy unless you're in like an NL only, deep NL only league that you need saves in. And Dylan Smith is probably your best bet. Let's go to the Cardinals, who traded away Jojo Romero, opening up the setup role, their top lefty setup role for Caleb Ferguson, who they acquired from the Reds in exchange for international bonus pool space. That one like only makes sense in the context of the Jojo Romero trade, where they realized the only other lefty in that bullpen was Justin Brule, and they were like, all right, we need Caleb Ferguson. I don't know why. It's not like the Cardinals are winning that many games recently, but they'll bring him in regardless. They also got a reliever prospect, Sandro Santana, from the Diamondbacks alongside Daniel Egan, who is a starting pitching prospect, the Diamondbacks number 5 prospect, and the Cardinals number 17 prospect. That was in exchange for Lars Nootbaar. Santana was the Diamondbacks number 26 prospect, now the Cardinals number 22 prospect. He's a 21-year-old southpaw who at high A and double A had a 2.14 ERA, 1.10 whip, 37% strikeout rate, and 11% walk rate. So some potential there based on the results from Santana, but Cardinals bullpen looks pretty similar. They did not trade Riley O'Brien. Yeah.
It's really, they're in a bad place in that bullpen too. It's been trending down for a while now. And I think, since June, let me see. Since June, they are last amongst bullpens and swinging strike rates. So there's just like there's like a lack of stuff there with like it's O'Brien, Soriano, and Stanek, and Stanek's velocity has fallen off. Mm-hmm. Soriano's been really bad. O'Brien's been, you know, you don't know what you're going to get from O'Brien on a day to day basis. So, they're not in a great place right here. But this is, you know, they're trying to look towards the future. So, yeah, we'll see. Yeah.
Crazy how many holds they've produced this year, because not only do Soriano and Stanek have 16 and 19 holds apiece, but Romero was over 20. So yeah. I don't know how they're doing that. O'Brien's got 26 saves, and they're not like a great team this year, but yeah, pretty surprising.
They had that run. Yeah.
In the early season. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they've been falling off dramatically in the lineup too. And they ended up being sellers, not crazy enough, but they dealt Dustin May, Lars Nootbaar, and Jojo Romero. So I think smart for the Cardinals not to go too heavy in on this season, but they definitely have potential for the future. They will need to address that bullpen next season. Mm-hmm. Let's go over to baseball's savviest team, the Rays, who placed Cole Sulcer on the 15-day IL with back spasms and recalled Chris Roycroft from the minors. They also had a brief cameo from Alex Cook, who was a little bit interesting. 60 grade fastball, 95 miles per hour on the four seamer, 18 inches of IVB, 1.6 HAVA, 6.7 feet of extension. I think that's pretty interesting from Alex Cook, but he's back in the minors. And then I think the most notable one, Tyler Wells, acquired via trade from the Orioles in exchange for starting pitcher Michael Foret, who was the Rays number 8 prospect, now the Orioles number 6 prospect. But I mean, Wells is exciting. Not only has he pitched really well for the Orioles this year, pun unintended there, but he's also 6'8", and it always feels like there is more potential to get out from him. And if any team's going to do it, it's going to be the Rays, and he'll join his former teammate Brian Baker in that bullpen, setting up for Baker alongside Kevin Kelly and Garrett Clevenger.
Yeah, that's a very, really good gift for them. They needed one more bullpen piece, and Wells, who's been pitching in the division this year, has been dominating, gives them also somewhat of closer experience there behind Baker. So now they have a really good group behind, they have Baker, Wells, Clevenger, Kelly, and even Cam Boozer's been awesome for them. So they got a nice little bullpen going for them. Of course, the Rays always figure it out. It was, in April, the bullpen was like a big question mark, but they always figure it out. So we'll see how that works. And now it looks like Yennier Cano is going to get the first save chance for the Orioles. He's in right now in the ninth. That extension
really made a big difference.
The extension did make a difference, and the Orioles trying to save as much money as they can. They don't have to worry about arbitration now.
Yeah, well, I'm happy for them. They saved a lot of money by not investing on this iteration of that club, because I can't believe that window is closing already.
Yeah, it's sad, but not really for Red Sox fans. So,
All right. Let's go to the Rangers, who were pretty busy at the deadline. They made one acquisition in the relief pitcher area, acquiring Chase Silseth from the Angels alongside Logan Ohapi in exchange for third baseman Angel Arredondo, who is an unranked Rangers prospect, is now the Angels number 28 prospect. So they'll get Chase Silseth, the splitter specialist. They also placed Jacob Junis on the 15-day IL with an adductor strain and recalled Winston Santos from the minors, then optioned him to the minors, then recalled Luis Cervello from the minors and optioned him to the minors, then selected the contract of Nolan Kingham, who is going to be a swingman in that bullpen. They also acquired Adam Mako from the Blue Jays in exchange for utility infielder Josh Smith and minor league starter Josh Steffen. And I think pretty sadly, the career of Chris Martin is likely coming to an end. He was activated from the 15-day IL after missing a few weeks with a shoulder impingement and then was subsequently designated for assignment. So no more Chris Martin, but we'll see Chase Silseth and Adam Mako enter this Rangers bullpen.
Yeah, I don't know if Mako should probably be on the roster right away
at some point.
It's another team, the Rangers, that just like, I get that you're struggling right now, but like do something one way or another. And Chase Silseth, they basically got for free because that prospect's not really anybody of interest. So I don't know. Silseth's the only guy that they need a real help in that bullpen if they wanted to be serious contenders, and
that's not enough.
Silseth's not the answer. So
no. They'll have him for a few years, though, so at least they have some upside for the future. Sure. He can pair with Lats and Teodo. They'll have him for 4 more years through 2030. Yeah. But Silseth is not somebody who I think we've had a lot of faith in, whereas he does have a lot of strikeouts this year, 28% strikeout rate, sub-3 ERA. He's really volatile with that splitter, and he does not throw strikes, 13% walk rate.
Interesting. I think at least the first outing he had, he was throwing a slider more than the splitter, which is kind of, I like that a little bit more. for him. The splitter is, again, volatile for him. So, yeah, we'll see. Maybe the Rangers make some changes and get him to, you know, his peak form.
Sure. Do you agree with Roster Resource that Peyton Gray will be the top setup option with Jacob Junis on the IL?
Gray or Silseth, probably, yeah. Okay. Gray's been giving up a lot of runs lately, but the stuff's been looking better. So it's, yeah, you know, and there's not a lot of other options. So, yeah.
Okay.
It's pretty weak right. Behind Lats, unfortunately.
Let's go to the Blue Jays, who didn't acquire anybody. They traded away Jeff Hoffman and Adam Mako. With Hoffman gone, Tyler Rogers gets the majority of holds opportunities, which he already really was getting. There's not many trusted righties behind him. Obviously, Braden Fisher is still around there, but you know, Spencer Miles, Chad Dallas aren't really guys I'm putting a lot of faith in. But at this point, it doesn't matter. The Blue Jays are in last place. They are looking forward to 2027. And whereas Hoffman could have helped them, I think they were smart to capitalize on him while teams still saw value in him, especially with that extra year of club control. And they got some pretty good prospects in return, but no more Jeff Hoffman in Toronto. You got any other takes on the Blue Jays bullpen as it currently stands?
Just trying to figure out who the seventh inning guy is now. I'm sure. Leaning towards the two lefties and Flaherty or Brandon Little. Little's been pitching better lately. We've seen good stints from him in the past. Braden Fisher's still there. Spencer Miles, too, they've been using, but I don't know. It looks like Yusavage just left this game early, so maybe I don't know if they would put Miles back in the rotation or what his deal is, but yeah, we'll see.
All right. Well, we got one more team to go through. The Nationals, they optioned Gus Varland to the minors to make room for Trevor Williams' return from the IL. That's, you know, neither here nor there, but they did make a lot of acquisitions in terms of relievers as they recognized the weakness in their bullpen. Hopefully they recognize their weakness in the rotation at some point and address that in the offseason. But the lineup is awesome. The bullpen has been terrible this year, but they got some reinforcements for closer Clayton Beater. They acquired Jake Bird from the Yankees along with Yovani Cruz, Ben Grable, and starting pitching prospect Jack Siebert, who is the Yankees number 14 prospect, now the Nationals number 14 prospect, and that was in exchange for first baseman Luis Garcia Jr. Yovani Cruz, pretty interesting 26-year-old righty. He has major league experience this year. AAA, 3.53 ERA, sub 10% walk rate, 33% strikeout rate, 70 grade fastball from Yovani Cruz. He can throw 100 miles per hour, so that's exciting. You mentioned some excitement about Ben Grable as well. 24-year-old righty, high A and double A this year, 2.45 ERA, 0.85 whip, 38% strikeout rate, and just a 7% walk rate. Grable also has a 70 grade fastball. So there are three potential guys just in this one trade that could really help this Nationals bullpen moving forward. They also got Will Dion from the Guardians alongside starting pitcher prospect Josh Hartle, who is the Guardians number 25 prospect, now the Nationals number 29 prospect, and outfielder Nick Mitchell, and Kendalys Vergüez, who I think is the best name traded at this deadline. That was all in exchange for starting pitcher Foster Griffin. Vergüez is a 22-year-old righty who's pitched at high A and double A this year, 4.13 ERA, 1.45 whip, but there is strikeout potential, 36% strikeout rate, 12% walk rate. So Will Dion, Kendalys Vergüez, Ben Grable, Yovani Cruz, and Jake Bird all added to a potential Nationals bullpen.
Yeah, I mean, Grable and Cruz, obviously good fastballs. Cruz has a velocity. The fastball is great. Grable has pretty good velocity, but yeah, the metrics on his fastball are really good. I think he's averaging like 21 inches of IVB. Or I saw some article that stated that. So
that's crazy.
Big if true. So yeah, like it's someone who I'd imagine he was at double A for New York, but I would get him to triple A at least now. He's 24. He's been dominating double A's. Mm-hmm. He should be in for a promotion. And then, yeah, I mean, between Cruz, Grable, and Dion, yeah, those are three guys who are, or at least you hope two of those guys are like, you know, long-term bullpen pieces for you, to go with Beater, and maybe Ribalt is another guy you found. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I see. I get that they recognize that the bullpen was an issue and they tried to get some help there. Even like, you know, Josh Hartle's probably more of a reliever in that sure. Guardians trade too. So they're definitely looking for reliever help in these moves. And yeah, it's at least they identified a need and
right. Went out. You don't to usually see it. That. You don't usually
especially relievers. Teams, yeah,
looking for relief prospects, but
yeah.
I mean, at this point, the Nationals are pretty stacked across the board. I just wish they had some better starting pitching prospects, but
right, yeah.
At least they got my boy Cade Cavalli, who's been really good this year. But I think regardless, I like the moves that they made. I think they recognized the weakness of the team and they went and addressed it, and they addressed it in, yeah, you know, in spades. They got a ton of guys, and it's pretty exciting, especially these high upside guys. And some of them will immediately impact the bullpen. I think Jake Bird should be up at some point, but right now, Yovani Cruz and Will Dion are already in the bullpen, and they could immediately become some of the top relievers in this bullpen behind Beeter and Ribalta.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's hope there for that bullpen. Next year should be hopefully looking a lot better come opening day for the Nationals.
All right, well, that's 28 teams, so we might as well hit the last two. The Diamondbacks did not make any trades, but it looks like Brandon Garcia is the closer. He got the first two saves after Paul Sewald was removed from the role, and then last night on Monday, he was set up for a save before the Diamondbacks blew his save opportunity. He pitched the ninth with a four-run lead regardless, but it seems like this is not a closer committee. This is just Brandon Garcia's job.
That's what it feels like, at least for now. Again, you know, Justin Martinez is in the middle of his rehab assignment. I think he was pitching tonight.
Okay.
So he should be back by the end of August. But for now, Garcia's the dude there, and he's legit. I mean, if you're looking for short term saves, that's a guy I would definitely be rostering. Brandon Garcia. He's
right,
left handed, but he's for real. I mean, there's good stuff there.
He has been great. It's surprising that the only lefty in that bullpen will wind up being the closer, but I don't think we're ones to argue about that. And the only other team we haven't talked about, the Astros, not much to talk about in terms of Josh Hader. He's been great since coming back from the IL, but Brian Abreu is looking more like himself. Is that the case?
Yeah, that was, I mean, the one, I don't know if you saw that leak trade between, they were, I forget who, I think the Astros turned it down, Brian Abreu for Trevor Larnach or something. I don't know. I think Jim Crane turned it down allegedly, but yeah, Abreu has been in July. Abreu was, I wouldn't say back to his self, but like he's definitely getting there. Mm-hmm. He was very good in July. Maybe he can get completely back to throwing 97 and with that slider in August and September, but it's definitely trending in the right direction for Abreu. It's been a tough long year for him, but it's good to see him starting to, you know, be normal again.
All right. Well, that's every single bullpen. We went through every single bullpen, and we rarely do that. Usually we can only make it through about 15, but I guess we were good on time, only 96 minutes thus far. So, Rick, why don't you go ahead and plug your socials and let everybody know what you're working on?
Yeah, I can. You can find me on socials at I Am Rick Graham. You know, still putting out daily RP roundup articles, as well as every Tuesday rankings for saves only leagues, save holds leagues, whatever reliever league you play in, there's rankings for it. So yeah, that's what I'm working on from now until the end of the year, end of the season. Right.
Sounds good. You can follow the pod at In the Pen Pod. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler. I am doing 4 days of the First Pitch podcast during the week. Once again, go listen to that one where I break down every single start from the, or every single trade from the deadline day. I also do the weekend editions of the SP Roundup as well as the Plus Pitch podcast. So check those out. And you can find more of my work over at baseballhq.com where I do playing time analysis for the Giants, A's, Diamondbacks, and Angels. But you can find links to all of my work at crumplerbaseball.com. That'll do it for this episode number 170 of the In the Pen podcast. We'll talk to you all next week.